Up next, Flora stays with us for our video pick of the week. And what have we got this week, Flora?
Switching gears slightly. We were looking forward to spring. And, you know, everybody knows the classic springtime signals of springtime, the robin, the spring peepers. But there are other organisms that herald, that are harbingers of warm weather. So we went and took a tour through the American Museum of Natural History's insect compactor to look at the bugs that are coming out this time of year, although it's snowing here in New York.
Wait a minute. Insect compactor? Is that like a garbage compactor? They're not squashing all the bugs?
It sounds violent, but actually it's just the file cabinets that get compacted. But
okay.
We looked at some of the bugs that come out, and you can expect, for example, stink bugs are coming out around this time, May flies in May, obviously June bugs, you know, coming out in June.
Right.
And we also got a sort of special look at the bee collection at the American Museum of Natural History. And in fact, we have with us today one of the people we interviewed, Dr. Jerry Rosen, who's the curator of the bee collection, and you can pronounce the class correctly, and I'm sure I can't, to talk to us about when bees are coming out. So are bees out yet?
Oh, yes. They're out. I collected the first wild bee on the 17th of March, right in my home.
But when it's too cold, bees can't fly, right?
That's right. When it's very cold, while insects in general have a hard time moving around, they go into a cold stupor. They just are sluggish.
So what are the bees in New York, for example, doing right now?
Well, right now they're doing nothing.
Like the rest of us.
Probably muttering under their breath, like the rest of us.
Where are they when they're not flying around? Where do they hang out?
Well, they hang out, most of the bees now will be hanging out on or in their nests.
That's outside of the hive?
Well, a hive is a term that we use for honeybees and honeybees only.
Uh-huh.
A hive is nothing but a nest of a honeybee. So there are all kinds of nests in different places. Most nests around here, I think, are in the ground, but there are nests in hollow tubes in old beetle burrows, for example. Mm-hmm. Carpenter bees, for example, are in their wooden holes right now.
Well, if there are no flowers on the trees now, if the bees are coming out, what are they doing? Where are they going?
Well, they're waiting for the flowers to come out, just like we are waiting for the flowers to come out. And a few flowers are out, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. And then there are flowers that bloom at different times of the year, and there are some very early blooming flowers. And some that you don't recognize. For example, willows. Willows bloom very early in the springtime, and they give forth a lot of pollen and a lot of nectar, and the earliest bees will probably visit willows.
And also the forsythia are also seem to be coming out.
Forsythia is coming out, but I don't think it offers a reward because I never see any bees going to forsythia. They might be attracted to the color, but they're not going to be attractive for the food that the forsythia bloom, you would think, would be offering.
Mm-hmm. How many species of bees are there?
Well, we don't know exactly, but it's in the neighborhood of 19 to 20,000. I think the official count of the number of described species of bees is 19,500. But those are the ones that are described, and then there are a lot of new species that have yet to be discovered. Not so many around here, but even around here there are occasionally found new species. For example, in our laboratory right now, we have two species represented from New York City that have not been described. And when I say described, I mean named and described. When you describe a species, you put a name on it, and that is the official name of that species forevermore.
So you're going to have a Bronx bee or something?
Well, I don't know what it's going to be called.
The Brooklyn Bees. That was a team we had.
Might be a Staten Island bee. You never know.
Well, I won't take Manhattan on it.
And you, I mean, you'll have one of the amazing things about our trip to the museum was just how many bees you have in your collection. Can you give people a sense of the scale of the collection?
Well, it's one of the largest bee collections in the New World. Maybe not the largest. We pride ourselves on the size of our collection, but actually, if you put all the bee collections that are sprinkled around the country together, we would still be complaining that we don't have enough specimens. So, and we share specimens.
Is it millions? How many are we talking about?
We have roughly between 400,000 and 500,000 specimens. Now, these are bees from all over the world, not just the United States and certainly not just New York. But there are, with 19 or 20,000 species in the world, and then we need to understand them, so we need many specimens of every species to understand the variation that one finds there.
In the video that Flora made, it's our video pick of the week up on our website, you show how a live bee goes from being alive to underneath a pin. Describe the process for us. What you do?
Well, when we go out to collect bees, what we use is a rather large insect net, butterfly net, if you wish. Any net will do. And we merely get the bees in the net, and then we transfer them to a killing tube.
And what's in the tube?
Well, it can be various substances. It can be ethyl acetate. It can be cyanide. Insecticide of one sort or another. Mm-hmm. And they die very quickly.
And then you, as we see in the video of Flora you made.
Yeah, you put it right through. But one thing is that was it. I mean, there was no chemicals. They just sort of keep, right?
Well, one thing to preserve them, then you have to be worried. I mean, one thing to kill them and then another thing to preserve them. To preserve them is very simple. You simply mount them on a pin and then keep them in a very dry atmosphere, as in the museum. And you do not let museum pests, and museum pests is maybe a beetle or an ant or something of that sort, get to it, because they will chew on the dead carcass.
But they don't decompose otherwise.
No, well, they do internally. The soft tissue simply dries out, and you're left with the exoskeleton, wow, the outside of the animal, that stays perfectly for a very long period of time.
100 years?
Well, certainly longer than that.
Really?
Well,
wow.
For example, take a look at amber insects. These are insects that are preserved in amber. They are virtually the entire animal, or the external part of the entire animal, that may be 1 million or 2 million years old.
Wow. We're talking about bees this hour with Dr. Jerome Rosen on Science Friday from NPR. I'm Ira Flatow with Flora Lichtman. Let's go to the phones. We have a phone call from Kyle in Pomona, New Jersey. Hi, Kyle.
Hey, how are you?
Hi there.
I had a question for your caller. I study entomology in New Jersey at the Richard Stockton College of New Jersey, and on the 7th of March, we collected a series of bees from the family Colletidae, what we determined to be Colletes inequalis, to the best of our ability. And at that time, the only abundant flowers were red maple, Acer rubrum. And we couldn't find much information about any bees feeding on red maple. So I was wondering if your guest had any background knowledge on bees that would feed on red maple.
Okay, thanks. Jack the Rosen?
Well, I'm almost certain that you're correct all the way around. It is Colletes equalis. It's a very early flying Colletes that you find in this area. And if you wanted to find out about the food preference of various species of bees, go to the Hymenoptera catalog, the catalog of Hymenoptera north of Mexico, and you'll find good hints about what kinds of bees go to which flowers.
We're always happy to unite scientists and their bees on this hour. So that was it's good. You knew that right off the top of your head. Do you know all the bees in the New York City area?
No, by no means.
Well, they say nice things about you.
In the New York City area, let's say in New York State, there are over 400 species of bees. That's a lot of bees.
Wow. I think most people think all bees are the same.
If you go out to Arizona, you'll find that there are probably 700 or 800 species of bees. In the Southwest in general, the bees are far more abundant in terms of species representation than the New York City area.
And how far south or north, going toward the poles, can they survive in the cold weather?
Well, it's not a matter of surviving. It's whether they're adapted to getting through the rough cold periods and come out in the springtime when the flowers are blooming. They'll go virtually as far north as they can go where there are flowers.
Mm-hmm. Are there places in the world that you are just dying to go to look for bees?
Oh, yes.
Well, maybe somebody's listening. Tell us about where you'd like to go.
Well, I and a chap who works with me would like very much to get to China and study the bees there. And as a matter of fact, we have made some initial endeavors along that line, and maybe it'll come about.
Mm-hmm. Are there tricks to collecting them? I mean, how do you plan a trip like that?
Well, in this case, we will get in touch with specialists in the country who know about us and we know about them, and we talk to them. And, mm-hmm. Can they accommodate us? Can they find permits so that we can collect the insects in their country? And
pack your nets.
In general, scientists are very internationally minded. We go all over.
Do you expect there are a lot of undiscovered bees there?
Almost certainly. I think it's one of the areas where, and even though many of them have been collected by Chinese entomologists, but we don't get a chance to see them, all the more reason to go there. And we want to do more than collect bees. We want to understand how they live. I am particularly interested in the nesting biology of bees.
Any new information about the colony collapse syndrome?
Well, that's a problem that honeybees face.
Right.
And I... one hears explanations all the time. They don't really know what it's all about. My own suspicion is that maybe any number of things that are affecting colonies in different parts of the country and different parts of the world. Mm-hmm. We don't think it's a single causative agent.
And it affects different places. It didn't really hurt the New York City area that much, I understand. Is that right?
Not too much. And indeed, in California, where people complained about the almond crop one year, and it was disastrous, why the following year, that part of California had a bumper at almond crops. So it's the entomologists, the farmers, they coped with those problems.
Well, Dr. Rosen, thank you very much for talking about bees this hour with us.
It's always a pleasure.
Thank you, Flora, for that video. Video pick of the week up there on Science Friday. Flora Lichtman, take you to the giant bee collection that Dr. Rosen has as curator and professor in invertebrate zoology at the American Museum of Natural History in New York. That's about all we have for time today. We want to give a big thank you. Last week, the band One Ring Zero gave us some great music for our spacesuit video last week. And we didn't thank them. We want to thank them because it was a great video still up there. And the music was from the new album called Planets. You can hear more of the music at oneringzero.com. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.